Did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right, it's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. Hey everyone, it's Kona, host of And Then They Were Gone, and I am coming to you today to talk about True Diagnostic. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part? It's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent straight to your door. True Age is actually sending me a test, and I'm really excited to see what it's going to say about my health. And frankly, a little frightened. Because even though I'm afraid it's going to tell me that my biological age is higher than my normal age, it's definitely information that I can use. Because by tracking my biological age, I can actually see how the changes that I make, whether exercise, diet, or sleep, can affect my health over time. And this isn't guesswork. The True Age test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working with Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I don't know. I like to know everything, so I think it's going to be really cool to know exactly how my lifestyle is impacting my body. I already know there's definitely room for improvement, and I think this is going to give me some actionable steps. So if you're ready to join me and find out your biological age, right now, my listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code ATTWG at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Just use the code ATTWG to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Though our podcast focuses on unsolved missing persons cases, over the course of the last 4 years, we've seen movement on many of the stories we've covered, including some resolutions. This week, we're going to revisit a few of the missing people whose stories we've told on this podcast and give you updates on what's going on in their cases today. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to update you on the stories of William Tyrrell, Irene Gakwa, and Chance Engelbert. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about this case going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. This is going to be a shorter episode, but I did want to give you some updates because we have had movement on some of the cases that we've covered. And I think it's really important to talk about that because, you know, one thing that I hear from people when it comes to podcasts that cover unsolved crimes is they're like, there's no resolution. And, you know,
could those people be your dad?
Well, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I think that it's important, and I've always said this, that it's important to tell these stories, to keep them out there, to give people information in hopes of eventually gaining a resolution. So periodically, you know, doing an update episode, I think, is important to show that, like, no matter how long ago these cases happened, no matter how long ago these people went missing, like, there's always hope and there's always a chance for some sort of resolution. And for finding them. Now, if you haven't listened to any of the original episodes, we are going to link those in the show notes so you can go ahead and listen to those first so you know what we're talking about before we get into the updates. But let's go ahead and get started. On September 12th, 2014, 3-year-old William Tyrrell and his foster family were at his foster grandmother's house in Kendal, New South Wales. The kids were playing outside when their foster mother and grandmother went inside to make tea. A few minutes later, they realized they couldn't hear William anymore, so the foster mother went out to check on him, but William was nowhere to be seen. An intensive search commenced, but no trace of the boy was found. Now, when we did this story, it was a 2-part episode for us because so much has happened in his case in the nearly 10 years since William's disappearance. When we left off in part 2, which aired in October 2023, Strike Force Roseanne, and that's the strike, the task force that had been formed to investigate this case, they had provided the Director of Public Prosecutions, DPP, with a brief of evidence recommending William's foster mother be charged with offenses relating to his disappearance. And those charges were specifically perverting the course of justice and interfering with the corpse. The police theory is that William died in an accident and his foster mother and grandmother covered it up by hiding his body. And they believe that the accident was that he fell off a balcony in the home. A coroner's inquest began in this case all the way back in March 2019 and was scheduled to continue into March of this year, 2024. But as we're recording this, it's July 2024. So let's talk about what's happened since we last talked about William.
Yeah, let's get into this.
What's that saying? Justice delayed is justice denied. January 31st, 2024 was the deadline for charges to be filed against William Tyrrell's foster mother. However, this deadline was pushed back due to new evidence that has been added to the brief.
Oh, okay.
The DPP's office, of course, isn't releasing any details about what the new evidence is, but it means that the inquest, which has been going on for 5 years already, is not going to be ending anytime soon.
This is wild how long it's taken.
I know. I had no idea that they could take this long. And we talked about this in the original episode. Like, this is a coroner's inquest. We don't have those in the state.
Right.
And so from what it seems like, it's kind of a trial, but no specific person is on trial. But it's all of the relevant parties giving testimony and evidence in a court. So it's more of
like a grand jury,
kind of like a grand jury. But again, there's no specific like person that they're going after. It's just like trying to find out what happened.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. The inquest is related to the foster mother potentially facing charges, but they're not the same. You know what I mean? Like she's not on trial.
Right.
So in February of this year, it was announced that the coroner's probe had been postponed until August, and they will be holding 2 more weeks of hearings in November and December 2024.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is going on for a long time.
Yeah. In May, the DPP released a statement saying that police has asked the office to, quote, suspend its consideration, end quote, of the case until after these hearings. So basically, the police are the ones who, you know, want to charge the foster mother, right?
Right.
But they don't want the DPP to make the decision about charging the mother until after these hearings, presumably because they believe that more evidence is going to be
uncovered.
You know, yeah.
That via testimony or
right,
whatever it might be damning to.
Right. So it's going to bolster their case is what they're saying. The lawyers representing the foster mother are, of course, unhappy with this turn of events, saying that they have urged prosecutors to, quote, expeditiously determine whether or not she will be charged, saying that, quote, the foster mother and her legal representatives call for disclosure of the evidence which police suggest forms the basis of any criminal proceedings, end quote.
Yeah, so they want to see what the evidence is, which is interesting because here in America, at least, when you get to trial, discovery is part of that where the defense gets all of the information.
Yeah. And so I guess because she hasn't been charged yet, that doesn't kick in. Right.
Yeah.
So I, you know, from what it sounds like, the police aren't under any obligation to provide her side with anything at this point.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you, I mean, well, I guess it's not a trial, so you can't really mount a defense.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing to defend so far. So they're just waiting. That's something big to have hanging over your head for years now.
Yeah.
While the inquest is at a standstill and William's foster mother continues to wait to see if she'll be charged in his death, both her and her husband have been busy in court. In November 2023, they were both acquitted of lying to the NSW Crime Commission. But in March of 2024, they were found guilty of intimidating and assaulting a different foster child.
Oh.
Yes. So we were talking about this when we did our episodes on William's case. This separate case was just kind of starting to make its way through the courts. Now, the charges and convictions for this were based mainly on about 1,000 hours of secret recordings. These recordings caught the father berating the child in a car as they sobbed, and the mother threatening to slap the child on two different occasions.
Well, this isn't really looking good for them.
Yeah, so that's the intimidation charge. Now, it's only the mother who was charged with assault, which she pleaded guilty to two counts of assault after admitting that she beat this child with a wooden spoon on one occasion and kicked them in the thigh on a different occasion. Lawyers for both foster parents cited stress over employment, money, and William's disappearance as factors that led to their behavior, which, you know, is not at all an excuse.
No.
Both parents were given 12-month good behavior bonds. They were also fined, in a whole separate mess, $1,500 over placing dummy bids in a real estate auction. We talked about that briefly as well. They basically tried to inflate the auction of their home.
Right.
So they only got fined $1,500 over that. A 12-month good behavior bond and this $1,500 fine, and I don't think they're going to be appealing the real estate thing, but they are set to appeal their convictions in the child abuse case.
Mm.
Despite, you know, what seems like a slap on the wrist to me.
Yeah, right.
William's 13th birthday was on June 26th, 2024, and September 12th of this year will mark 10 years that he's been missing. With hearings not set to resume until the end of the year, we likely won't hear anything substantial about his case until 2025. That is, of course, unless someone out there knows something and makes a call. There is still an active $1 million reward in this case. In 2019, Irene Gakwa left her home in Kenya to join her brothers and make a new life in the United States. Irene quickly got a job and a boyfriend. She and the boyfriend, Nathan Heitman, met online. Irene's family wasn't too sure about him, but by the summer of 2021, she had moved with him to the small town of Gillette, Wyoming, from Idaho. Idaho is where she moved to be closer to her siblings. And by February of 2022, she was gone.
If I remember correctly, this case, it involved a lot of theories that he was controlling and isolating her from
right.
her family and really not generally a good person.
Yeah, the whole move to Gillette, Wyoming, was very suspicious because it's like a tiny, tiny town. He had no real reason to go there.
Yeah.
And it was just very isolated and very far away from everybody who she knew in the States. Now, Nathan's story, when he was eventually confronted about Irene being missing, was that she had packed her belongings into two trash bags and was picked up by someone at their house who was driving a dark SUV.
I remember that. And there was something about the trash bags, too.
Well, yeah, he said that she used trash bags to take her belongings despite having plenty of
suitcases.
Luggage.
Yeah, right. It just wild, absurd thing to say.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, he had to explain how she apparently left, you know, of her own volition, yet left all of her luggage behind. And that's the best he could come up with. Once police started an investigation into her disappearance, they checked her bank and credit card activity because, again, you know, they had to see if she could possibly have just left on her own. But the charges that they found brought them not to some faraway destination where she was running to escape her boyfriend, but instead brought them to a local Walmart. There, Nathan, not Irene, was seen on surveillance video using Irene's credit card to buy a shovel, a pair of pants, and a pair of boots.
Using her credit card to buy things to dispose of her body.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Nathan was eventually arrested on charges of felony theft, two counts of crimes against intellectual property, and unlawful use of a credit card. And he was also accessing her email account. So that's where
the intellectual property.
Yeah, that's what that came from. He pleaded not guilty at his arraignment on May 31st, 2022. And that's basically where we left off in our story. Actually, I don't even know if we had gotten to his guilty plea. I think we had just gotten to his arrest. So I'm sorry, his not guilty plea. So yes, he pleaded not guilty May 31st, 2022. But then in June 2023, so about a year later, Heitman was sentenced to 3 to 6 years in prison and ordered to pay $13,200 in fines after switching his plea to guilty. After he's released from prison, he will be under 3 years of supervised probation.
Right. And this, though related to her disappearance, he hasn't been charged with murder or anything really directly related to her disappearance yet.
No, not yet. Yeah, nothing, unfortunately. Now, the $13,200 fine that he was ordered to pay is made up of a $2,000 fine for each of his three convictions, $3,666.46 in restitution for the money he stole from her checking account, and $3,230.65 for the charges he made on Irene's credit card after her disappearance. In addition, he has to pay $825 in court costs and $1,500 for his public defender. So the reason all this happened when it did is because in April of 2023, he was set to stand trial for those charges. He pleaded guilty a couple weeks prior to the start of trial in exchange for two of the charges being dismissed. So he was charged with five charges. Now he was convicted of three. Nathan Heitman going to prison is certainly a good thing, but it doesn't get us any closer to finding Irene, unfortunately. Irene's brother Kennedy told People magazine, quote, "We are happy with the outcome of the current charges. However, we are still wondering what happened to our sister Irene," end quote. Heitman, of course, remains a person of interest in Irene's disappearance, and he has continued to be uncooperative with the investigation. In November 2023, a new investigation was opened by the Torrington Police Department. This investigation stems from when Heitman was incarcerated at the Wyoming Medium Correctional Facility, which is located in Torrington. In June 2023, after an unknown incident, Heitman was transferred to the maximum security Wyoming State Penitentiary in Rawlins, which is where he remains today.
So, sounds to me like he might have gotten involved in a fight with an inmate or something like that.
Yeah, it sounds like it was something along those lines. And it happened right after he got there because, I mean, he pleaded guilty in June of 2023 and this incident took place the same month.
Yeah.
Wisconsin Department of Correction officials won't divulge information regarding the incident that led to Heitman's transfer, citing security reasons. Stephanie Kiger, WDOC's public information officer, did say, however, that Heitman has no record of disciplinary infractions. So he didn't cause
whatever happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting. Mm. Yeah. While he was being held in Torrington, Heitman wrote a letter in which he said that he had been moved three times because there may have been a bounty on his head, though he couldn't say for certain if that was actually true.
All right.
He went on to say that he was originally in isolation, but asked to be placed in Gen Pop. However, he also stated that his, quote, first and second cellmates knew who I was before I even said hello, end quote.
Had this garnered that much media attention in the area? Did it?
Yeah, it was a big case in Wisconsin for sure.
That just seems odd to me that not only would they know him, but that there's some sort of, vendetta or something.
Yeah.
That just seems odd.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it kind of does sound like he's maybe overinflating like his importance in some way.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, this is all speculation.
Sure. Well, the one good thing, if he is in Gen Pop, there's always hope for, you know, a jailhouse snitch, him saying something about Irene.
Yeah, maybe. Truthfully, it's really tough because just there are a lot of abandoned mines in the area. They right. believe that he placed her in an oil drum. And just logistically, even though there have been several physical searches, they do believe that finding her body is going to be very difficult. And so far, it has proven to be. So the goal for the family right now, because they don't believe Irene is alive. So the goal for the family is to find her body and bring her home. Nathan Heitman, for his part, still denies being involved in Irene Gakwa's disappearance. On July 6, 2019, a young father was spending the 4th of July weekend with his wife, son, and his in-laws in Gearing, Nebraska. 25-year-old Chance Engelbert was a new father and was getting ready to start a new job after being recently laid off. It was supposed to be a relaxing weekend with the family that included a trip to the local rodeo and a round of golf. But after an argument at that golf outing, Chance was upset. He told his wife Bailey that he wanted to cut their trip short and go back to their home in Moorcroft, Wisconsin. When they returned to Bailey's grandparents' house where they were staying, Chance said he wanted to take a walk to cool off. He never returned. We covered Chance's story in August 2022. At that point, this is what we knew about his journey that night, so I'm going to give you the basic timeline. At 7:28, two different surveillance cameras caught Chance walking down 10th Street in Gearing. He was seen on another video at 7:51 p.m. in front of Weathercraft Roofing. This was interesting because that's a 23-minute gap, but those two locations are only 0.2 miles apart, which would be about a four-minute walk, according to Google Maps.
Right. So, you know, what was he doing for those 20 minutes?
Exactly. Then at 8:01, there's a Ring doorbell camera that allegedly shows Chance in front of an apartment building located at 48 Terry Boulevard. Now, the person seen on camera isn't close to the doorbell camera, so it's difficult to be positive that it was Chance. That location, though, is about 0.4 miles away from Weathercraft Roofing, which, according to Google Maps, would be a nine-minute walk. So the timing works out for it to have been him. The last text sent from Chance's phone was to his Aunt Katie at 9:08 p.m. It was jumbled, though, and appears to have been a pocket text. Cell phone pings put his phone near Riverview Golf Course at around that time, but police say that he could have been anywhere within a two-mile radius of that cell tower, which covers the area where he was last seen in Gearing. After that, his phone was either shut off or went dead. Chance's friend Matt Miller believes it was the former because Chance told him he had a full battery when they had spoken earlier.
So they think somebody turned his phone off.
Right.
Or he did.
Yeah. In July 2024, just a few weeks prior to the recording and ahead of the five-year anniversary of his disappearance, police announced that they had a new lead in Chance's case. Investigators announced that they had a new lead in Chance's case. This lead places the young father 2 miles from where he was last seen on surveillance footage. Ryan Daniel, a private investigator working on Chance's case, told News Nation Live that a convenience store clerk interacted with a man fitting Chance's description between 8:30 and 9 p.m. on July 6, 2019.
And this was 2 miles away from where he was last seen.
Mm-hmm. Now, according to this witness, the man believed to be Chance purchased a drink and tobacco. He was also seen having a tense conversation while at the back of the store.
Oh, a tense conversation.
Yeah.
I wonder who with.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, they must know that based on phone records.
Sure.
And that was prior to the last text being sent from his phone, that jumbled like pocket text.
Yeah.
That was sent at 9:08.
Okay.
Daniel went on to say, quote, if he did leave the store between 8:30 and 9 p.m. that night, that would put him down there in that area, which we believe not only the area of the incident, but the area of time. Chance's disappearance is focused on between 9 and 9:15 p.m.
That's a short window.
It is a short window. And I think that they're basing that on, you know, not only this new sighting, which shows him being, you know, physically fine between 8:30 and 9, but the fact that the jumble text was at 9:08 and that his phone was shut off shortly thereafter.
Yeah, I mean, the jumbled text, like a pocket text, makes you, to me, that sounds to me like maybe there was some sort of physical altercation.
Yeah, like a struggle. And, yeah,
and
yeah,
his phone was getting hit or tossed around either in a pocket or...
Right.
During the altercation.
Or, I mean, I could even see it being like he was, that Chance did it himself, like trying to
either text or call 911 or something.
Well, yeah, or get out in touch with somebody and then, you know, obviously couldn't.
Yeah.
Now, in addition, there's another witness that says that they saw two women in their mid-20s in a state of panic. They were apparently trying to stop traffic in the vicinity of one of Chance's known locations that evening. They were eventually picked up by a truck and appeared to know the driver.
Hmm. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So
they were trying to stop traffic.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost sounds like maybe he got hit by a car or something and they were like trying to help.
And then
they left.
And because there was a huge storm going on at the time.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that's certainly a possibility. This was apparently during the storm that all this was happening. But, you know, the my only issue with him being hit by a car and then them trying to stop traffic is I feel like somebody would have
noticed
something,
yeah.
You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
But instead, they only saw these women getting into the truck. And again, it sounds like either they knew the person who just happened to be driving by or one of them had called, you know, for a ride or, you know, to be picked up.
Right.
Daniel said that this account is significant because, quote, we think possibly they may have seen Chance. They may have seen somebody out that night. That time frame and where Chance was when he went missing, we need to narrow down, end quote. These witness accounts don't answer what happened to Chance, but it's heartening to see movement in this case after 5 years.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, to have new witnesses show up like that.
That's huge.
That's fantastic. I mean, it really sounds like they may be close to figuring out what happened to this guy. They still haven't said for sure that foul play is involved, but obviously that is an avenue that they're looking toward. But hopefully these new witnesses and the continued investigation will bring about more information and eventually allow Chance's friends and family to finally know what happened to him. Thank you so much for joining us for this update episode. As a reminder, you can find the links to the original episodes in the show notes. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos on our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
I will see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then There Are Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.